Nightingale, children of all ages, and Walter Page Radio presents the greatest podcast in the world, the Marketech Samuel Plan, the Devil's Advocate Shinobi, the Lunatic King Maverick, and Single Syllable Mother, the right side of the pond.
And of course, if you're not down with that, we got two words for you!
Sup, Lords of Pain, and welcome to the right side of the pond.
It is Friday, and welcome to our Money in the Bank preview. I suppose that this very much seems like a pay-per-view which WWE have to get right, really to stop the bleeding as much as anything else. I mean, it's gone beyond sort of restoring anybody's faith and more towards kind of like reminding people that they're even semi-competent based on the last... I mean, how many weeks are we from WrestleMania now? 5 weeks out from WrestleMania?
Feels like a lifetime.
It does, doesn't it? And, you know, WrestleMania being such a positive show has been replaced by, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of utterly incompetent television and more and more reports of just absolute raging chaos backstage amidst a backdrop of AEW very definitively getting their act together, getting TV deals, getting pay-per-view platforms sorted out, and continuing to sign wrestlers. And you just think you are playing into their hands in every single way imaginable. But did you read that report that came out sort of just chronicling a lot of what's been going over the last 4 weeks? I think it was like a drunk former writer like called into a podcast and like laid out like what had been going on.
I mean, it's a curious thing, isn't it? Because on the one hand, a lot of what was said, you sort of, given what we see on TV, it's very easy to believe every word of what was spoken. On the other hand, it's irresponsible to not go, okay, a former writer, an alleged former writer who's drunk may not necessarily be the most reliable source of information in the world, but it's easy to imagine that there's at least a kernel of truth in what was said, because there's that thing as well, I don't know if you saw, about Triple H liking a couple of tweets and then unliking them. And, you know, there's reports now going on that he's one of the most frustrated people backstage. We've said before on the show, haven't we, since 2016 especially, it's become increasingly difficult to not look at the way WWE TV has been going and saying, okay, there's got to be a correlation with what we're told about everything going through Vince, especially at this point. Because at this point, it's clear that, I mean, it's just... It's bizarre how history, you know, I always say history doesn't repeat itself in the literal, but it's bizarre how sometimes it can, because now we've got a competing promotion that's going to be airing on TNT of all channels. I mean, you know, how providential is that? At the same time that WWE seems to suddenly be suffering from all of the things that we've been conditioned for years to believe blighted WCW in its final days. I mean, it's quite the bizarre time to be a wrestling fan right now.
I mean, an interesting time to be a wrestling fan, I think, as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Matt and I obviously spent last week discussing the AEW to ITV news over here. And as you alluded to there, the TNT deal being announced in the US is obviously huge too. And then Imp tweeted out a report that perhaps WWE might be looking to move on from Sky and to go to BT, which again is kind of interesting. So I mean, I guess the interesting thing from that writer's sort of call-in for me was that sort of everyone has to remember they're always writing for an audience of one, and it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. And that's such a good way to put it, because when you watch WWE TV sometimes, it is like you can pick out the things that were Vince and that were all that were written to amuse Vince. And obviously they gave the revival shaving back skits as an example of that. Which is, as you suggested on Twitter at the time, depressingly retrograde and homophobic to the point of you know, the point of ridiculousness.
Well, yeah, to you know, without wanting to, you know, come off as a member of the outrage culture that has a tendency to overtake social media sometimes, it was, you know, it was offensively retrograde in the way, and just ugly in what it was implying, and did neither side any favors. You know, it was like something straight out of 1996. I mean, it was just. Yeah, the less said about it, the better, honestly. But
yeah,
it's like you say, you know, this audience of one thing is becoming increasingly obvious. The fact that there is, you know, I mean, just, they lean on the superstar shakeup supposedly to have kind of you know, freshened things up or whatever. And as we were saying at the time, you know, they did it and then they undid it and then they did it again and they're still doing it and undoing it. I mean, one of the things that strikes me most prominently about Money in the Bank, and by the way, it's gotten to the point now where I'm not even checking the YouTube clips anymore. I'm just done with it because it's like I'll watch the pay-per-views, you know, and I'll probably do the video packages that sum things up nicely. And if I hear rumblings that, you know, X match was really good or something, then I'll probably check it out. But I'm not committing any more of my time to this shit show, which is the only way to describe it. And you know, one of the sort of things that struck me in the last week was that they've announced Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan against the Usos on the pre-show for Money in the Bank. And it's like, well, first of all, that's the SmackDown Live Tag Team Champions wrestling a team that's just been drafted to Monday Night Raw. And second of all, that's a guy who just headlined WrestleMania. I mean, that's just obviously one tiny, tiny corner of this mess. And you know, I'm looking forward to Seth versus AJ. I'm looking forward to Seth versus AJ for meta reasons more than anything, sort of in universe. Apologies, by the way, folks, if you're a regular listener to Sports Entertainment's Dead. I had some technical issues that prevented me from getting a show out this week, but even there, I'd recorded a show that didn't do. I usually do the alternative pre-show ahead of pay-per-view. I didn't do it because it's just, even I'm struggling to find anything in all of this to actually, you know, really get on board with. I mean, it's either repetitive or it's retrograde, as you were saying, or it's just nonsensical. And I was thinking to myself earlier today, you know, this must be, for me, the worst creatively that the product has ever been. And I mean that, you know, ever. Because I could go back to 2010 when it sucked, or 2011, and it was terrible, but at least there was some semblance of, you know, at least storylines played out. At least there was something sensible about what they were doing. It was just poor, but it was sensible. You know, now it's poor and not sensible and just bafflingly inaccessible. And, you know, when you've got all this stuff with AEW going on, it puts WWE in a very tenuous position. I mean, they're making a lot of money. You know, it's a bit early to be making apocalyptic predictions here. But if they don't get their act together, you know, it might not be too early to be making those kind of predictions in another couple of years, which is a really stunning thing to think about.
And it all stems from this kind of smugness of being the only game in town, doesn't it? And I think you mentioned the shake-up. Well, what's interesting about the shake-up in particular is that, again, it was done. But that report suggested that what was planned was changed by Vince an hour before Raw went on air.
Which is mad, isn't it?
So all these wrestlers didn't know if they were moving or not. Some wrestlers moved and got moved back and because they hadn't thought out things like real life marriages. And then they kind of like put out this PR spin on it saying, oh, you know, we want to be the well-being company. The same week, more or less, that a documentary comes out about their lack of healthcare for their wrestlers. It's just, you know, it's just kind of like
and the same week they announced they're going back to Saudi Arabia again.
Exactly. You know,
after they've done that homophobic bullshit with the Revival. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, and also they've got to be. I mean, obviously they've been running a fair amount of racial based stuff with the Kofi Kingston title shot, and in the aftermath a little bit as well. I mean, even Kevin Owens's parody of inverted commas Big O had you know, some, I don't know, some uncomfortable aspects to it for me. So yeah, it's not been, to put it mildly, a very good 5 or 6 weeks for them. And you know, yeah, it's difficult to see where they go from here. Really, I mean, it's one of those things. I think we've come to expect that WWE in the summer months does not do very well, and they usually in recent years have pulled it back around Survivor Series or so. So I guess we'll just have to see how things are. I mean, as you suggested before, Money in the Bank is one of their biggest shows. In fact, me and Maz did a show a few weeks ago talking about how it essentially is the fifth of a big five. And so, you know, usually you'd expect this to be something that people came away from thinking, oh, okay, things aren't so bad. But, you know, it's difficult because they put themselves in such a corner with, you know, a portion of the fan base.
Yeah, I mean, it feels different this time somehow. I think whether that's because of the AEW stuff going on in the background, I don't know. But it feels like we're headed towards a flashpoint. And who knows, you know, what that's going to take the form or shape of. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this just goes on and on and on and on and on forever, for the rest of time. You know, but as I said, it's true they're making more money than they've ever made. But at the same time, if people stop watching and it ends up that not really anybody's watching, then they're not going to be making much money.
Well, these TV deals rely on the fact that they are, you know, they are ratings pullers for those TV shows. I mean, obviously people don't watch, you know, live TV in quite the way they used to a lot of the time. But still in America, it seems that, you know, for Fox and for what's the other network? USA. Like, they do still see those shows as being original content that pulls in more viewers than repeats of some other crap that they happen to own. So as long as they're happy to pay WWE the big bucks for it, you know, all the better, I guess, and the same for Sky over here. But the problem is, as you say, if they stop gaining new fans and the network numbers stagnate, and then they start to lose these TV deals, then suddenly they would be in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, absolutely, especially if at the same time, because this is, it's the big thing, isn't it, is that there's suddenly a readily accessible alternative. AEW have to do well, and they have to hit the ground running, I think, and they have to not abandon, because they've already announced they're going to run with certain ideas that have kind of been vaguely sketched out. Not all of them, I'm confident, are necessarily good ideas on paper. Things that have been tried before, this reliance on statistics and stuff, rarely works out in wrestling from what we've seen, but who knows. And then, you know, and ultimately they're still reliant on an old pay-per-view model. So there's still a lot to see in terms of, you know, how the landscape settles over the course of the next 12 months. But it certainly feels like there are things in motion that could irrevocably alter the landscape of professional wrestling in a way that we haven't seen since 2001. And that's, you know, beyond any, I mean, that alone is exciting. It's just a shame that, you know, we're being asked to commit still to this awful product that just, you know, infuriatingly has taken what I consider to be the most talented generation of wrestlers I've ever seen in my lifetime as a fan, and managed to take them and put them in a product that sucks. You know, and that infuriates me that someone like Dean Ambrose feels he has to leave the company, purportedly, to be able to just be able to you know, express himself creatively. That guy like Seth Rollins is put in the top position in the company and isn't really able to do anything with it because everything that he's being fed is crap. That people like The New Day, Kevin Owens, you know, Mustafa Ali, and so on and so forth. I mean, they've just booked a headlining match between The Undertaker and Goldberg in 2019 in Saudi Arabia. Like, that's just an awful, awful look for them. It really is. And you know, increasingly, they're looking like a company who, with ever more transparency, are simply trying to sell the idea of a good conscience. And, you know, it may just be that one of the most important battlegrounds that any competition with AEW is fought on is WWE selling conscience and AEW operating with one. And, you know, it's going to be, that alone is going to be a very interesting thing to see pan out. But hopefully, you know, as vain as the hope may be, maybe they surprise us all again on Sunday. And maybe they get their act together, but I'm not confident that they will. And I think that this situation's only going to get worse as we head towards SummerSlam, honestly. I think the best thing they could do at this point, as a start, is to give themselves the sort of the, you know, the fresh, the blank sheet of ending the brand extension and sort of almost starting from scratch. Call a bunch of talent, you know, spring clean the roster, end the brand extension, and just try and do a hard reset, maybe at SummerSlam.
Well, I mean, there is some hope, isn't there, in the sense that there's a lot of rumours out there that Fox and USA both want the brand extension to be over. The wild card thing, and plus what happened with Ricochet and Black back in sort of March, February time, seems to be like, you know, because they did a soft end of the brand extension the last time, and then they finally hard ended it when Orton and Cena had that ladder match. TLC 13, was it TLC 12?
To be fair, I think it ended before even that.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the definitive end to it, isn't it? Because they unified the title. So, I mean, it's, so there is some hope there, I think. The fact that they've also merged the writing staff, so SmackDown and Raw no longer have separate writers, supposedly. So, I mean, again, that might be an indication where things are going. I mean, I thought it was very interesting to hear that both Stephanie and Triple H have tried to talk to Vince and tell him that it's terrible, but he just isn't hearing it. I mean, the fact that even Stephanie apparently is frustrated by the whole thing is, I think, is, again, an interesting detail about all of this.
And Shane as well, I think the report said.
Well, I mean, Shane walked out the last time, didn't he? I mean, Shane walked out in, you know, 2010 or whatever, because he was kind of fed up of not being listened to, and then also saw the way the Lie of the Lamb was Hunter and stuff. So, yeah, it's certainly interesting times. So, I mean, let's run through these matches then. We'd have to spend, we've actually kind of had an interesting chat about the lay of the land, which I think is more valuable, so we don't spend a ton of time on any of these. So you mentioned Brian, Rowan together, you know, like winning the tag team championships and then facing the Usos in a non-title match in a dark show pre-show, which as you say is not like the world's best booking. I haven't actually seen the match that everyone, you know, sort of poured scorn on for the 93 super kicks. But, you know, if anyone has seen it, just describe how bad it was and then I won't have to watch it.
Quite. I only saw a clip of it that got tweeted. You know, sometimes you come across these like 1 minute, 20 second clips on Twitter or whatever. Played it and there was probably about 15 super kicks in that single 90 seconds. So they've obviously seen what's working for the Young Bucks and gone, let's do that. Or their agent has. I mean, interestingly enough, I thought it was quite funny that that WWE just coincidentally happened to tweet out or retweet a post by ITV News that had what's her face on the Becky Lynch's opponent, I forget her name, Lacey Evans.
Yeah, Lacey Evans, yeah.
So, yeah, it's, yeah, whatever, it's fine. You know, I get frustrated. It's like, how do you moan all the time about how you've got no new stars. Well, you know, there's no consistency in the way you treat them. Like I say, to take a guy from headlining WrestleMania, and then he's not even on the main pay-per-view just because he's a tag team champion. So, obviously, tag teams, they go on the pre-shows. Like, come on. You know, Daniel Bryan holding the titles, regardless of who he's wrestling, that makes, just Daniel Bryan being in the match means that it should not only be on the main pay-per-view, but it should be one of the top matches on the main pay-per-view. It's called roster positioning.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's one of the things we preach all the time, isn't it? Yeah, very frustrating in that sense. Okay, so let's look. Cruiserweight Championship, Tony Nese, who of course won it at WrestleMania against Aria Daivari. I mean, I'm glad to see Daivari get a chance in a kind of more prominent spot. As we've said before, 205 Live has been somewhat denuded of its stars. So, yeah, I guess some guys get a chance to step up now.
Hipster word of the month. Denuded. Yeah, sure. It'd be interesting. I don't really know what to make of it, to be honest. I'm not a huge Tony Nese fan, in all honesty, and I know that he has a certain following. But I'm utterly unconvinced by him. I was unconvinced by him as a villain. I'm unconvinced by him as a hero. There's something about him that I can't be sold on, I think. I don't know what it is. But, you know, I mean, he's had good matches. I'm not saying the guy can't wrestle. I'm just saying that he lacks a certain star presence for me. So, but Ari Daivari is an interesting one. He doesn't seem to have... he's managed to avoid, I think, the ethnocentric pitfalls that often come with WWE, probably because Vince doesn't know what's going on that show, I would imagine. So, yeah, I'm sure it'll do the cruiserweight thing, which is just tear the house down unexpectedly, you know, and be one of the best matches of the night, probably.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, from a pure ring point, I'd imagine so. I mean, I think with you know, with someone like Nese, it's just a case of that belt badly needed somebody else other than Buddy Murphy to be carrying it, and he's the guy who currently is. So, you know, I don't mind that at all. Yeah, I think it'll be decent. I mean, I imagine that Nese will retain. They've gone very much Challenger of the Month for the Cruiserweight Championship, which I'm a fan of.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it suits that scene and that championship.
Absolutely. I think as well, based on this week's events, that, you know, we're getting some crossover again, because Ligero was on 205 Live this week. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. The more NXT UK in the rest of the product, the better.
Absolutely. So let's move on to the main card then. So the match that should have taken place at WrestleMania, but sort of obviously had to be like 30 seconds long because Rey Mysterio was injured or something, which was Samoa Joe against Rey Mysterio. I imagine they'll get a bit longer this time, or they're just going to have Joe murk him again.
To be fair, I wouldn't mind that. It'd be nice to see them get some match time, though, wouldn't it? Because I imagine the two of them could put on a hell of a show for people. Ray's been in a great form since he came back, and Joe is just infinite. I mean, why Joe still isn't sort of one of the top guys in the company on a sustained basis, I have no idea. Everything about him is credible and you know, compelling. And just really, really entertaining to watch. So it's always a pleasure to see Samoa Joe wrestle. Ray's on great form. And hopefully they'll have. I mean, again, it's a match that I'm sure, and this is indicative of the product and this pay-per-view as a whole, and I imagine more pay-per-views still to come for many, many months, which is, you know, you can rely on the combinations booked to put on some really fun matches, but the matches will rarely be able to exceed just being really fun, because there's no sort of decent story to support them. And that's often the X factor between something that is, you know, a good match and you go, oh, wow, and something that genuinely takes your breath away. So I imagine it's going to be a good match, but it will not be able to be anything more than that, which is a funny thing to say, I know, because a lot of people will say, well, if you get a good match, who cares? But I'm a guy who wants a match to be more than just good. You know, I'm a guy who wants a match to feel like it means something.
Well, this is the thing about the US title, though, isn't it? And I think more than any other WWE championship, it's one which just never gathers any importance other than, I guess, arguably when Cena was having those disgusting matches with people. It never gathers any importance because it's just treated as this, oh, we need to put a mid-card match on the pay-per-view, let's stick a US title match here. Because if you look at it, right, Finn Balor's carrying the Intercontinental Championship and he is in the Money in the Bank match. You know, for me, like, why isn't the Intercontinental Championship being defended? If Finn Balor wants to be in the Money in the Bank match, like, sorry, mate, you got to work double duty. Like, it's just, there's so much, like, inconsistency with how titles are treated. Like, one pay-per-view, you'll have the US title on, another one will be the Intercontinental. Sometimes it'll be both of them. Sometimes it'd be neither of them, and there's no internal consistency there at all.
I think the US title in particular has to me, almost always felt completely irrelevant. And I'm going all the way back to when it was like introduced on SmackDown back in 2003. Like, I understood then because they wanted an equivalent mid-card title when they had the hard brand split the first time. But for a long time now, even when Cena was carrying it, it just always felt, you know, kind of like a bit of an afterthought, and still does. And it's, you know, talking about, you know, hopefully that maybe they lean into some kind of hard reset, they end the brand extension, unify those two championships. Because for the life of me, I mean, even when they ended the last one, they still maintained the two mid-card titles, even after they'd unified the world titles and the tag titles and the women's titles. And it's, I think it's because they struggle, or Vince struggles, or whoever struggles, to put together story-driven mid-card matches now. So having the US title around is just a useful MacGuffin for them to lean on and not have to bother about a storyline. Oh, you know, they just won the US title. But yeah, absolutely. Because if you unify the championships, then you'd be able to have the title defended and another guy in the Money in the Bank and not worry about someone pulling double duty. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, I mean, I for one would love to see the story of an Intercontinental Champion defend the title and then go on in the Money in the Bank match as well. Like, those kind of things I always usually really enjoy. And Finn's the kind of performer who'd be able to sell it well.
And, you know, like, this is the thing is, again, you look at the Rumble. If you have a title that's below the top belt, usually you defend it and then you go in the Rumble. Dean did that, of course, famously in 2016. It's frustrating to me the way they can't make their minds up as to what their titles are and what their titles mean, you know. And it's all a bit ridiculous. But yeah, as you say, Joe and Mysterio, I dare say they'll get 10 minutes and use it well. All right, let's move on and have a look at Roman Reigns versus Elias. So, I mean, you have to feel for Roman Reigns. He gets a long-awaited, refreshing move to SmackDown, and then he gets put in this retread of a anti-McMahon storyline, and then is furthermore saddled with the 260-pound albatross known as Elias. I cannot still get over the ongoing sabotage of Roman Reigns' career. The man beats cancer, comes back, and this is his storyline. I cannot get my head around that.
It's bizarre, isn't it? It's just another example of a company or indeed an audience of one who has no fresh ideas left, if he ever had any in the first place. And yeah, I mean, that's probably a little harsh, but that's the mood that I'm in. And yeah, like you say, it's, you know, the guy comes back from an incredibly emotional experience, one that everybody, even those who were his fiercest critics, were able to empathize with him for. They put him in a relatively decent story with Drew at WrestleMania, and then you follow it up with just something that isn't anything, because it's an anti-McMahon thing, but it's not really completely an anti-McMahon thing, because there's really an Elias thing, and Elias is, you know, just a TV guy. Like, he's not, you know, he's a guy you use to fill TV space, seemingly. And like you say, it's just flat.
And Roman Reigns, right, historically, isn't the sort of performer that, like, you can put a Seth Rollins versus Elias, and you could, and you think, all right, Seth might drag something out of him, and indeed he did
last year at Money in the Bank.
But Reigns, for all of his many strengths, that probably, you know, working with mediocre talent isn't one of them. If you put Reigns in there with top tier talent, he will, you know, he will absolutely knock it out of the park. But I've never seen a Roman Reigns match against a marginal talent that was any good. I mean, you look at his record last year in a match with Jinder that was dreadfully, a match with Bobby Lashley that was dreadful. And this match with Elias will probably be dreadful, because Elias is a throwback to the 80s in not a good way. I mean, he basically, and goodness knows I'm not a moves guy, but he literally does punch, kick, and that drift away thing. That's Elias' moveset, like, you know. So, and he is no Jake the Snake to make a right hand mean something.
No, quite. Like I say, he's a segment guy, isn't he? He's a guy you use to fill TV. He's not a guy you put into 15-minute pay-per-view matches with top stars.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, and Elias's whole career is owed to the fact that Vince McMahon finds him amusing, which comes back to, you know,
Audience of one.
comes back to it, doesn't it? I mean, they pulled the old, you know, the biggest like heel cliche in the book, on Wednesday night, like they did a house show in Manchester, and you know, and actually, you know, house show in Liverpool, and had him come out in a Man City top. You know, it's like, Jesus, have we really not moved beyond Kurt Angle making fun of whatever sports team like City he was in at the time? It's just, yeah, it's just, yeah, still more retrograde stuff. All right, so I suppose Reigns will probably win, I imagine.
You'd hope so.
You would. I mean, what we really need is Reigns v Kingston, isn't it? You know, it seems to be a bit of a no-brainer as a face v face feud, that one. And Reigns can do his diesel thing. It'd be fun. But, you know.
Yeah, but that would require consistent roster positioning, so.
Quite. All right, so we're going to have a look at a rematch from WrestleMania. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, the old Backlash pay-per-views and so on, right, were always about WrestleMania rematches. And is this our only one? Oh, no, Becky and Charlotte. Kinda. Yeah, it's kind of like been so long since Mania now that I've forgotten that Miz and Shane had even wrestled. But it was an unexpected success on the night of WrestleMania. It was a match that everybody dreaded, and it turned out to be, you know, mercifully short and quite intelligently put together. Now they've got a steel cage match, which seems to me to have 35-minute snorefest written all
Oh,
over
God, can you? And
it.
it's just another transparent waiting game for Shane to fall off something tall. You know, and it's like, come on, like you know, we've seen this 50 million times. It's not really that exciting anymore. You know it's going to happen. And the whole, like, that's my big issue with the Hell in a Cell he did with Kevin Owens, is it was like 40 minutes long. And you just knew that it was all building up to him jumping off the cell again, and it like he did at WrestleMania. And so it just becomes all exercise just becomes pointless. And it's such a shame that they couldn't have just left it at that
Yes,
Falls Count
exactly.
Anywhere match that was better than people expected it to be and moved on. In typical WWE fashion, they've got to latch onto a storyline and beat it and beat it and beat it and beat it until it's dead and rotting in the ground. And you know, I mean, Miz as a babyface has always been a hard sell in the past. And why on earth you would think that the best way to try and get it off the ground this time would be in an overlong feud with Shane McMahon, I have no idea.
No, quite, and I think the thing is that, you know, like Miz is a babyface, as you say, it's a hard sell, but he did a reasonable job with it running up to WrestleMania. So, you know, all right, move him to Raw, and put him in a feud with Drew McIntyre or something, you know, and see if he can run as a babyface. If not, no, it's not gonna be hard to turn him heel again, is it? So instead, it's like they think, oh, well, yeah, oh, God, is Shane McMahon still like doing that weird thing where he like bullies ring announcers? Because that was one of the more bizarre storylines I've seen in WWE in quite some time.
I have no idea. Like I say, I've checked out of TV, so I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Yeah, me also. But
And
yeah, like
here we are previewing the pay-per-view.
partially because there was a 20-minute segment of him bullying a ring announcer. Like,
Well, quite, yeah.
how is that television? You know, I could watch an episode of Friends in 20 minutes.
Well, this is true.
Anyway, right, so.
Or better yet, an episode of The Thick of It, where Malcolm Tucker will basically just vocalize our thoughts about WWE's
I
product.
mean, yeah, you know, name your TV show, Simpsons, whatever. Yeah, not a smart booking decision in the least. I think this will be incredibly bad. You know, like if the WrestleMania one was a pleasant surprise, this will be the crushing inevitability of failure.
I don't think I can follow
Excellent. Right, we'll move on.
that.
Okay, so what should we take a look at now? Let's have a look at. Oh, let's look at the women's Money in the Bank match. So, I mean,
Alexa Bliss news is broken since we started the show that she's been removed from the match.
Yes, indeed. Now, when I saw that news come out, I'm a bit worried. I'm a bit worried because she obviously had a long time out with concussions anyway. And if this is a recurrence of that, then you have to wonder, like, how long it's going to be before she's in Paige's situation and, you know, being asked to manage random tag teams. So I hope she is okay because she's, you know, one of the very best performers on the roster. But, I mean, it makes sense not to put anything as dangerous as Money in the Bank if they do have a worry about her. But yeah, get well soon, Alexa. We love you. So you've got Natalia. Like, can we just have a moratorium on Natalia? Like, can we just not have Natalia in something for a change? I mean, I don't know. Can we just, like, not have Natalia in something for a change? I just don't understand why. Why is she in this match? Like, you know, there's no table with Jim Neidhart's face on it. Like, can we just not do it? Dana Brooke, who apparently is the hardest worker and is in the ring setting it up with the technicians every night, so good for her. Naomi, Lisa the better. Bailey, who of course mainly just gets made fun of by the Iconics these days. Mandy Rose, who probably a dark horse to win this, I would think.
I would think.
Ember Moon, pleased to see her get a chance. Carmella, like, what again? Like, why do we keep putting Carmella in things? And then, of course, to be announced, because Alexa has dropped out. A few ways they might go with that. If they've been just working this Sasha Banks thing, then maybe she shows up. Not sure how much of a work or how much of a shoot that is. Could be that they stick a Shayna Baszler or somebody in there, if they were going to be really bold. Or it could just be any old jabroni.
My issue here is really, really do not care.
Well, no, quite. I mean, that is a major issue, isn't it? Because, I mean, even if you just look at the talent of the match, like, I mean, who would I care about winning this? Mandy and Ember? I mean, I don't really care about anybody else that's in this.
But the thing is, like, with Ember, I'd love to see her get a prominent role in the women's divisions, but I don't want it to be through Money in the Bank, which is another concept, by the way, Money in the Bank, that just needs to die a death. It's done. It's had its day. It was useful for a while. It's been an albatross for longer than it was useful, and it just needs to be finished.
Yeah, I agreed. I mean, I wrote a column on that, in fact. It was last year or the year before, but yeah, I definitely agree with you there. It's had its day and it needs to go away. I mean, just have a, even if they just had a break from it for a bit. And that's what me and Matt were talking about, you know. In fact, would you, you know, could you replace it with King of the Ring for a few years?
Well, one of the things, obviously, last weekend we did the 7 million listeners special, myself, Imp, Doc, and the One Nation Radio guys. You know, we were talking about that sort of thing, you know, what can they do to get better? And I said, at this point, I think they need a radical overhaul of everything, and that means retiring concepts that have now been around for 10 to 20 years and going back to basics with everything, you know, and not doing Hell in a Cell for years and not doing Money in the Bank for years and not doing, you know, ladder matches every 2 months. And I mean genuinely get radical with it and go sort of down the NXT route and rarely do these things at all.
Yes.
Let alone every year, let alone every other month, you know, and I'm talking years. Like, I would happily not see another Hell in a Cell match for 20 years, 10 yes. years, 15 years. And I'm talking that radical because it's at a stage now where it feels like, you know, although obviously, you know, names come and go and we've had spikes in quality and drops in quality and so forth, fundamentally, the way the product works has not changed for 2 decades.
No, agreed. And I think the problem is they rely on these crutches. The gimmick matches are a crutch, aren't they? Like,
yeah,
people like them because there's some people falling off stuff. And then it's kind of like, how many of them have any rewatch value? Very few.
Yeah, so we've got sidetracked, as we all want to do. In terms of the women's Money in the Bank match on Sunday. I mean, the one kind of silver lining for me is I remember last year thinking both the Money in the Bank matches delivered on the night and kind of exceeded my expectations. So I can kind of sort of perhaps vainly hope for that. But like I said, as to who wins, I'm really not bothered and I really don't care. And maybe that'll be an advantage when I come to watch the show.
True. I mean, my guess would be Mandy Rose, and then she walk around with it for quite a long time. And
I would put money, if I was a betting man, I would put money on whoever wins it cashing in to take one of the two titles off Becky that night.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so speaking of which, Becky Lynch is, of course, pulling double duty against Lacey Evans for the Raw Women's Championship and against Charlotte for the SmackDown Women's Championship. So, I mean, I think there's issues with a couple of things. I like the double duty thing. I think that's great. Have they done the best job with it? No. But I like the concept, because I think Ziggler did something similar a while back where he was doing double duty on pay-per-views. I can't remember why he was doing it, but he did.
They did it with Seth as well.
That's right.
2015 at Night Champions when he wrestled Cena and Sting back to back.
Yeah, so I love the concept. I guess the problem is that Lacey Evans is greener than, you know, greener than chlorophyll, and you know, Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair have wrestled approximately 973 times already, so you're not going to see anything new in the SmackDown match. I'm sure it would be good because those two have chemistry and history and all the rest of it, but it's a Orton Cena levels of amount of times it's happened now.
And it's then, worse. It's Charlotte Sasha levels.
I mean, nothing could be as bad as Charlotte and Sasha, to be fair. I mean, the matches were horrific, if nothing else. But Becky and Lacey Evans, I can't see that being a raging success. The best you can hope for is a kind of John Cena v Bobby Lashley from God, whenever that was.
It's not a bad shout.
You know, so it's not, you know, you get Becky Lynch, who's arguably the hottest star in all of wrestling, and then you kind of give her this, you know, albatross for post-WrestleMania storyline, which is, I guess, you know, par for the course with WWE, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's so, God, this has proven to be a depressing show. It's so indicative of the company again, isn't it? Because they've got this good idea and they bungle the execution, and it's indicative of the company because they've got 50 million women's wrestlers and we're seeing Becky versus Charlotte for the 5,007,000th and 98th time. And we're seeing Becky and Lacey Evans, who is nowhere near perhaps as good as she ought to be in this position. And certainly won't be able to deliver as good a match as, say, Becky and Ember Moon might, or Becky and Bayley might, or Becky and Mandy Rose might, you know, or Becky and any of the, even Natalya or Naomi, I would take over Lacey Evans. I know you may not be able to go quite that far, but, you know, my point being that, like you say, on the one hand, you've got a match we've seen too many times, and on the other hand, we've got a match we probably don't really want to see because one half is too green. So it's, you know, they've taken what should be a win-win and managed to turn it into a lose-lose.
So I guess the big question is, Becky retain both belts, or are they going to use it?
Just to interrupt you, frustratingly, they'll get away with it because the performers will deliver when the matches come, or at least Becky and Charlotte certainly will. And that's, again, you know, such a frustrating thing is they write shit, they lambast their current stars as saying they're not stars, but it's those current stars who are turning shit into something that's watchable come pay-per-view night.
I mean, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I guess the big thing to ask then is, are they going to keep running with this double duty story of Becky Lynch, which would be the most interesting thing to do, or are they just going to kind of go, oh, let's just make the brand split a bit neater again and we'll have a drop one of them?
I don't know, but I would think... I don't know, in terms of whether it reflects on a neat brand extension, I'm not that optimistic. But I, like I said earlier, I definitely think someone, whoever wins the Money in the Bank, cashes in and wins one of the two titles. I don't think Becky's going to be a double champion much longer after this.
Yeah, I think my if I had the book, I would be probably at least getting her through to SummerSlam and seeing, you know, seeing what she could do with it. Because when people have this kind of unified champion thing, it's like they never quite execute it as well as they should do. I mean, Jericho writes about that a lot in his book, doesn't he? Okay, so Becky Lynch to lose one of the titles by cash in. I'd actually like to see a Mandy Rose try and cash in and then get tapped out, that old idea, but I guess we'll see. Okay, so let's have a look at the men's Money in the Bank ladder match then. So we've got Sami Zayn, who hates the audience and everybody else, Ricochet, Drew McIntyre, Baron Corbin. He's done half get around, didn't he? Ali, Finn Balor, Andrade, and Randy Orton. Randy Orton, still going. It's a decent field. I could do without Corbin probably, and I could probably do without Randy Orton, but it's a decent enough field that you think that they might do something pretty good.
Again, the match will deliver, you know, but the issue for me with this is, first of all, Baron Corbin, another example of the audience for one phenomenon, I think. Because I'm pretty sure everybody on planet Earth realizes that he's awful, or has been allowed to become awful, I should say.
Yeah.
But my issue with this, which is what I covered on the Sports Entertainment Is Dead episode that did not and will never air, I guess it's the Bret Hart versus McGee of LOP Radio.
Good rap.
Was about the fact that you've got this field of Money in the Bank participants that on paper you go, okay, I know why they've put Ali in this. I know why they've put Finn in this. I know why they've picked these particular characters to be or wrestlers to be in this match. But they've basically done it with a view of what stuff can we do in the match. You know, it's a bunch of guys they've picked because of the stuff they can do, rather than a bunch of characters they picked because being in Money in the Bank plays into their character arcs. And what I did on this SEID was sort of say, if Money in the Bank happened in 1994, in the summer of 1994, you could have picked these New Gen characters because it would have fitted perfectly with their arc, to demonstrate two things. First of all, that New Gen is awesome, as you and I know, but also, second of all, to demonstrate how much, you know, that kind of foundation can help elevate something like Money in the Bank, concept like Money in the Bank, into being more than the sum of its parts. But as it is, it will remain basically limited to being the sum of its parts, which again will be a very entertaining sum, but, you know, will leave me wanting a little bit more. I'm sure I look forward to see what Ali in particular does in this, because I think he's got the chops to really be able to create one of those kind of magical versions of the match that anchors itself around a central narrative, if he's allowed to do so. But the prospects of who might win are kind of bleak for me. I mean, I dread the idea of Baron Corbin winning a second Money in the Bank.
Oh my
case.
God!
But it feels like something WWE would book right now.
My guess is Drew McIntyre, just because his whole persona over the last year has been, I think, heading this way, and I'd say Ricochet was the kind of outside contender, simply because who wouldn't want to see Ricochet v Seth Rollins, for example?
Well, indeed.
I can't see Corbin winning it, despite, you know, prophecies of doom. Orton, I wouldn't think so. Zayn, promos might be fun given what he's doing at the moment, although that was quite funny as well, that like those Sami Zayn promos about like the fans being crap and stuff were all Vince's idea supposedly.
Yeah, well, quite. I'm sure the feeling is mutual. excuse me. Oh god. I'm choking on the idea of Sami Zayn as Mr. Money in the Bank. I forgot what I was going to say now. I derailed myself.
Well, that was dramatic. let's move on then and have a look at the two.
Oh, that was what I was going to say. That was what I was going to say is the most depressing thing is whoever wins it, you know immediately you know, what's going to happen is there'll be a quote-unquote surprise cash-in, and either they'll win or they'll lose, but either way, they'll have a title reign that won't sustain them in a main event because Money in the Bank has proven itself to be a concept that cannot sustain people at a top level unless your name is Edge.
Or Seth Rollins.
Or Seth Rollins. But I would venture that Money in the Bank was a minor part of, was really just kind of the moment that kind of, oh, I suppose you could say this. Yeah, all right, okay, Seth Rollins as well.
Yeah. And I mean, you might argue Alexa Bliss, but I guess it depends if she ever comes back or not. Right, then, let's have a look at the two men's title matches, world title matches. Kofi Kingston, Kevin Owens first. We did say at the time Kevin Owens came back that it was pretty odd that he was being booked as a babyface, even though he was being inserted into the match with Bryan instead of Kofi, which seemed a heel move. I think the most confusing thing about Kevin Owens is that they ran these vignettes of him being a family man and eating popcorn at a cinema and, you know, and all that stuff, which seemingly to promote him as a babyface. And then they realised pretty quickly that, oh no, hang on, we've got Kofi Kingston as champion. He'd better turn heel. I don't mind the heel turn. I think that was, you know, that was fair enough. Kevin Owens doing powerbombs and aprons, fine. It's what Kevin Owens is good at doing. But yeah, the sort of, Kevin Owens joins the New Day as Big O and then betrays them thing. It was all a bit half-baked, really, wasn't it? But I dare say these two could have a good match with each other again.
Yeah, yet again, a match that will deliver on the night despite the material that they've been given. And that, you know, by the way, that's what I've always said about this generation is, you know, I think their success is relative to the circumstances for every generation that they are performing under, and this generation has had to contend with bullshit that no other gen has ever had to contend with on multiple fronts, and yet they've still managed to make, you know, watchable to great stuff out of what they've been given. I think that speaks to why I've called them the most talented one that I've seen. But that's just an aside. I mean, the Kevin Owens thing is a quintessential example of lack of forward planning, lack of foresight, living week to week. You know, evidence of how enslaved the product is to Vince's whim. And because, you know, they were going to have him wrestle at WrestleMania, then they changed to Kofi, but instead of just waiting to bring him back and carrying on running those video vignettes until they could kind of figure out a readjustment a little bit to decide how to reintroduce him to TV, even if it was just a story-driven non-title feud with Daniel Bryan that I think a lot of people would have enjoyed, they just rushed him out of Fastlane. That meant they built to his title match that he was returning on in 2 weeks while there was something else going off that people were more interested in, which did him very few favours. Then they introduced Ali to remind people that actually that was never going to be Kevin Owens' match either. Then they realised that they had nothing for him at WrestleMania, so I think he was left off the WrestleMania card entirely.
Yeah.
Which was not a good look to say, just not only was he meant to be one of the company's top guys, but he was also freshly returned and freshly turned as a babyface. And then they realized that everything's been bungled, so they turn him into a bad guy, which is done as a reaction to Big E not being around, seemingly. And the whole thing is just bungled Kevin Owens' return that should have been able to see him reascend to the top spot he should be in. And instead has immediately just once again, I mean, you talk about Roman Reigns' career being sabotaged, has once again undercut Owens to the point where, to me, it feels, and people may disagree, but to me, this feels stone cold.
Yeah, it does.
No pun intended, because it just, you know, like, I mean, fine, even whatever. And I don't think it's done Kofi any favours either, who I think for some fans was already fighting a bit of a stigma as a mid-card for life guy. You know, and you bring him out of WrestleMania as WWE champion and you throw him this kind of just this dead fish of a feud.
I mean, you said about sort of this being stone cold. I mean, even this whole thing about trying to give Kevin Owens like a stunner as a new finishing move, like I can't really get on board with that, especially because he just doesn't do it very well.
Well, I mean, that was you know, Kevin, lest we forget, Kevin Owens' first main roster match against John Cena, he used the pop-up powerbomb, his finish, in his first ever main roster match, and John Cena kicked out of it.
Yeah, well, at least said about those matches that the better, really. I mean, I just think that WWE never ever managed to do Cinderella title runs as well as they do Cinderella title victories. So as soon as Kofi Kingston won that belt at WrestleMania, which was an amazing moment, he was doomed to suffer this sort of a run where, you know, he'll have a couple of matches with a couple of people. They'll be decent to good matches, and then he'll lose it to inverted commas traditional main eventer, and he'll go back to the mid card. And you know, and we'll always have that WrestleMania season, but ultimately it isn't something that will be sustained. And you know, that's just how those title runs worked. It worked that way with Eddie. It worked that way with Chris Benoit. You might even say the same of some of Jericho's title runs, really. So,
and really of Daniel Bryan's, although I know that got sort of unfairly cut short because of injury and other elements as well.
Yeah, no, quite both. I mean, I guess you got this time around felt a bit different, didn't it? From November onwards, but yeah, certainly the one, yeah, the one
from 2014,
yeah, and the one before that from 2011.
12.
Yeah. Okay. So let's have a look then at what we assume will be the main event, Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles. Very much the in-ring worker match of dreams, I suppose, in the company today. I guess that's how it's perceived by people on the outside, at any rate. But I guess the problem with this match is, as good as it will likely be from a technical point of view, is that ultimately there's no story.
Yeah, which is what I was saying earlier. You know, I mean, I was able to kind of interpret some stuff on SCID a few weeks back, but it was me just doing the legwork and trying to make something out of nothing. I think you can do that, but you shouldn't have to do that. You know, this is ultimate. I mean, I am glad that they've run with it instead of holding off on it, because, you know, sometimes they hold off on things when they shouldn't. And rather than just go for the biggest match they could do there and then, which is sometimes the best thing to do. And so I'm happy that they've run it. But yeah, like you say, it's a shame that yet again they've been able to conjure up nothing other than the most kind of generic sort of, you know, oh, they're wrestling as a tag team and they've hit each other, but it was by accident, or was it by accident?
Oh,
or,
yeah,
you know, it's just the most soul-destroying, lukewarm creative that they've been given for what should be, you know, one of the most, and I think, to be fair, is still, for many fans, one of the most exciting matches WWE can do, if not the most exciting match WWE can do. But that's, again, for reasons that are meta, and it should be for reasons that are in universe for my liking, and it's a shame they've not been able to conjure anything up, especially for something that, again, essentially writes itself. You know, AJ's boasted for however long that that SmackDown's the house he built, and Seth has been banging on for however long about how he's burnt the authority down and made it, you know, made Raw Monday Night Rollins. You know, you've got instant narrative right there. Two guys who see themselves as the definitive guy on the show that they're on. You know, it could have been a best in the world versus best in the world type deal. Any number of different things. You know, but they've even turned Seth heel again. You know, I mean, my concern at this point is Seth has been on this powerfully emotional journey for years. You know, and now he's at the end point. What you were just saying about them not being able to do Cinderella title reigns as well as they do title chases, like, they need to very quickly, for my liking, figure out, you know, how Seth's character now evolves again, before he just becomes generic worker champion.
I mean, my wish for Seth would be, you know, that kind of definitive, Bret Hart title run. I guess the problem is, I mean, again, I think Seth was responsible for the direction of a lot of the way his character has gone, and you do assume he has the pull to enable that to happen as he is champion.
You would hope so.
My preference for an AJ Styles feud would have been this kind of, I would have gone the young lion, old lion thing, you know, because ultimately AJ Styles is, you know, a good, he's a generation on from Seth Rollins, you know, he's a good, what, he must be 10, 12 years older than Seth Rollins.
He's, well, I've always said, you know, Styles is Cena's generation.
He is. He's the same age as Cena, is he not?
He is, and he was obviously wrestling at the same time as Cena. It's just he was never in WWE.
Yeah, quite. And of course, he's maintained his athleticism a little bit more than some of the people he's contemporaries with. But yeah, it's they need something other than I want a fatal four way. You know,
this is essentially, when you take that generational view of it, this is essentially what you would have got if you'd have seen AJ versus Shawn in, say, like 2009, for example,
yeah,
or 2008. You know, that's what this is.
And actually, you could look at the Kurt Angle v Shawn Michaels match from WrestleMania 21. Like, I know you're not a fan of it, but. Or maybe that's a bit too strong, but you're not as enamored of it as you once were.
Yes.
But certainly, you know, AJ Styles v Seth Rollins should be an event of that sort of magnitude.
I mean, I hope that it turns into one. I mean, I've been talking all show, you know, the match will deliver. I hope it's one of these situations where the match is of such a quality that it becomes
a story
magnitude.
The story is found in the match, and that informs the next match. You assume they will have another one.
You assume. I mean, I don't know if I'd prefer them to do it one and done with the sort of the, you know, to emphasize the magnitude of it. But I'm sure if they did have another match, then that one would be great as well.
I mean, well, it's WWE, so how often do you get one and done?
Yeah, exactly.
Rarely. Okay, so I think Seth to retain.
Yeah, I would hope so. I'd be frustrated unless they hot potato it.
Yeah.
But Seth is the kind of character. The journey he's been on, and the whole way that they angled the chase with Lesnar, you know, and the whole kind of context of the last 2 years. Feels like the end point should be a longer title reign for him, especially when you think what he did as IC champ, and especially when you think that's something the Universal Championship itself desperately needs to be rehabbed after having been on Brock Lesnar for so long, Goldberg before him. You would hope that happens, especially because we've just come off of what felt like 3 years of AJ's WWE champion. Like, do we really want to move back into an AJ's champion cycle again?
Definitely not. Yeah, definitely not. Okay, so we think Seth Rollins to retain. Maybe they'll go to a non-finish of some sort. You know, there's always that possibility. Okay, so that's Money in the Bank. As we talked about, rubbish build, but maybe this show might end up starting to turn the ship in the right direction. Let's cross all of our fingers on that one. All right. So
said with absolutely no conviction at all.
No, I mean, but conviction needs to be earned, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
So before we get out of here, let's just do some plugs. So as Plan mentioned earlier on, the 7 million listener special from last Sunday is available. Saturday even. It's available to download on demand. You can also, of course, listen to all the regular shows. So Monday with Zanman, Tuesday with the One Nation Radio Boys, and then later on with the Global Impact Boys. Wednesday with Plan, providing he presses record. Thursday, Imp with the Perfect 10. Friday will be us. And then, of course, you get Doc on a Sunday. So that is our lineup for the next
bit. I feel like I just need to say before we properly sign off that I did press record. It wasn't that kind of a technical issue that I had. I won't bore people with the details, but I definitely pressed record. I'm not Mazza. I don't lock myself out of my own house.
Well, quite. Okay. Fair. I mean, Plan a vigorous defense for himself there. yeah, you can be the judge, listener. So
fuck you, man.
So, of course, as we descend into chaos from the right side of the pond, it's goodbye until next time.
Bye.
There we go. It's almost an hour.
Well, I'm thoroughly depressed.
Well, quite. Yeah, you probably have to cap it or end up being 5 hours.
Oh, God. Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Not only is everything shit right now, but everything's like really, really long shit as well.
At least you're not doing Aftershock.
Oh, I know. The sense of relief is incredible.
I bet.
Right, okay, crazy. I need to go and eat because I'm starving.
Yes, so cool, enjoy.
Have a good week, pal.
Yeah, and you. Catch you later.
Yeah, see you soon. Bye.